Hey friends, just quickly, my new book, The Proof is in the Plants, is now available. Get it from plantproof.com/book. Thanks so much for all your ongoing support, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I just cannot believe how prevalent cardiovascular disease is worldwide, but in Australia in particular. But my dad taught me how to cook, and everything had a bit of an animal product in it.
And I was the same. And for not one second do I think my parents were intentionally feeding me foods that were not as healthy as they could be.
I know at the time he genuinely believed that that was the healthiest option possible.
We need to understand that information is evolving, science is evolving. There's more ways now in 2019-20 of us sharing and spreading information that our parents didn't have. They didn't have access to that. They have to go to the library and sit down and try and decipher things, often in technical terms. And they didn't have podcasts like this. It's a different era. We're so privileged now to be able to share information and help people.
That's my friend Sean Ryan, and this is episode 89 of the Plant Proof Podcast. Hey friends, welcome to the Plant Proof Podcast. It's awesome to be back here again for another episode. For new listeners, welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Simon Hill. I'm the host of this show, the Plant Proof Podcast, physiotherapist, nutritionist, and currently writing a book on nutrition with Penguin, which will be published in 2020, not long now. I'm glad that you managed to find the show, and I really hope that you get something out of today's episode that helps you become more mindful and conscious of the way that you live. That is what each episode is all about, a non-judgmental, non-preachy space to talk about diet, to talk about being mindful of our decisions, and an opportunity to sit down with inspiring people from all over the world, doctors, nutritionists, dietitians, athletes, people who have overcome chronic disease, and generally folks that are working hard to create positive change in the world. This week's guest, Mr. Sean Ryan, a longtime friend of mine for over a decade now, who I actually lived with for 6 months or so in Manchester back in 2013. We had a lot of fun together. We always have a lot of fun together. Sean and I, as we say in this exchange, have quite a strong friendship. But over the past 5 or 6 years, I think it's fair to say, and I don't think he'll mind me saying this, that we've sort of gone down different paths. He's been working through some incredibly tough things in his life. The loss of his father to heart disease, a gambling addiction, regular drinking, smoking, partying, eating pretty poorly, lots of animal products and lots of ultra-processed junk food, and overall living a lifestyle that really takes its toll on not just the body but also the mind. And now, having overcome his gambling problems and successfully losing a little bit of weight in 2019, I recently learned that he is wanting to continue his trajectory towards better health and happiness. And really, I'm here to support him on that journey. He is, however, confused by what to do. He sees so many polarizing messages online and has received so much conflicting advice from people around him. And this is what really intrigued me. We caught up recently merely just to catch up, and when he started talking to me about his diet, naturally I gave my 2 cents, and he started challenging me about the things I was telling him. And I thought, what a perfect person to have on the show. An everyday guy with real, very valid questions who clearly wants to learn, who wants to change his lifestyle but doesn't know where to start. Getting experts on the show is incredible, and we need that, but this is the stuff that honestly gets me most excited, changing someone's life for the better, and that's what I hope we can do together for Sean. So in this first episode together, we have quite a broad conversation. Sean unpacks his why, the reason for wanting to explore a healthier diet. He challenges me on multiple things and we touch on a few specific questions that he has. All in all, it's an introductory for him to the science at a very high level. Hopefully something that you can relate to and perhaps take inspiration from in your own conversations with those around you who may also be looking for help. Or you may find it's an episode that is worth sharing to a friend or family member who is in a similar position. Overweight, consuming a diet that's not serving them and really reaching out for help because they're unsure where and how to start. Okay, friends, let's do this. I'll see you on the other side. It's time to meet Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan, welcome to the Plant Proof Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's a pleasure to have you on the show and to be doing it in beautiful Bali.
Yes, yes.
We're in quite a nice villa today and looks like it might start to rain, so we might even get a bit of thunder in the background.
It's nothing like a bit of thunder. Thunder buddies.
Hey, so let's just jump straight into it. You and I, we've known each other for how long now?
Going on 10 years, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's at least a decade, I'd say. Yeah, maybe a touch over.
Yeah.
So we go way back and we've got a really deep bond, you know. There's a little love there. We've had some fun over the years.
Had our ups and downs.
You know, we've had ups and downs, but nothing I think that is out of the ordinary. Yeah. But what we've got is one of those relationships where time can go past. We might not see each other for a while. A year can go past. We can catch up. And it's like
nothing changes.
It's like nothing changes. Yeah. And I think we get each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how I feel.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, today we're here to talk about you and your health and the journey that you've had with your health and what's going on in your life now and what some of your goals are. We were talking a couple of nights ago, and it actually was my idea because you brought up a few things about your health and really just how confusing it is to work out what on earth we should be eating.
100%.
So I thought, you know, in speaking to you, I really thought that this was a conversation that will not only benefit you and myself, but also the listeners, me talking to you as someone who you don't have your head in the nutrition books. You're not spending every day of your life reading studies, and you have a lot of very valid and very common questions that I imagine everyone has.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, it's just so confusing and there's so many different ideologies out there. And for me, I'm a big meat eater and it's always been a big part of pretty much every single meal. I mean, my days start off with a flat white with full cream milk. My, you know, dinners are usually finishing with some sort of meat and veggies or salad. So, and for me, for so long, I thought that was healthy eating. And I mean, there is a lot of bad stuff in between and, you know, some drive-through McDonald's here and there and some chocolate, but I'm sure it gets the best of us. So,
yeah, I think what you're describing is essentially a typical Australian diet.
Yeah, for sure.
Your meat and three veg is how all of us were brought up, right?
Yeah.
And families do their best in cooking for their kids. And it's you're cooking with foods that you know. That's all you know.
Yep.
And very much what we're talking about, I guess, is, you know, a product of our environment, which is something that I've written a lot about in my book. But I guess a couple of nights ago when we sat down and we were talking, what is the sort of this reason why you're all of a sudden now wanting more information? Why now? Why is this important to you?
Like, to get right to the crux of it is we're coming to the end of a decade and, you know, the new decade's coming up and you start to actually really look at how old you are, what you've done, where you're going, what you've got coming up. And it made me come to the realization that no male in my family has actually had a 60th birthday. They've all passed by cardiovascular disease. And honestly scares the crap out of me. So being 32, that means my dad passed away at 53. So I've got 20 years left. And I'm single right now. I don't have a partner. I want to have kids one day. So by the time that all happens, you know, that could be 5, 6, 7 years away before I have a child. Therefore, I'm passing away when he's 13. And I just don't want that for myself. Mm. I don't want that for my kids. You know, I had to go through it at, you know, 25, 26. And that was really tough on me. I just couldn't imagine going through it at a younger age and not being able to cope. So I've just started going, okay, what can I do to prolong my life? You know, obviously I'm going to stop drinking and, you know, I'm an ex-smoker. I have been smoking in Bali because they're nice and cheap. But, you know, things like that I'm ruling out, and everything kind of leads me to plant-based. But then I find myself looking at, you know, meat-based diets, and it's just because I'm so confused. I don't know what to do. So, and that's how that conversation came up between you and I. And yeah, I'm just got so many questions and where to start, how to start. Moderation. Do I go, you know, all in? You know, how do I go about it?
Well, definitely, I think this is going to be an evolving conversation between you and I over a few episodes.
Yeah, okay.
I think something that's really important before jumping straight into sort of how to make the shift is having a degree of skepticism, which is what you have.
100%.
And you threw a lot of questions at me the other night, and I love it. I love when people are skeptical, because if you're not skeptical about your diet and you just make changes based on what I say, you're very likely in 3, 4, 5 months to find another way of eating from someone else, someone who is a compelling speaker, and all of a sudden you jump ship and you're trying another diet, and that's a forever ongoing cycle of jumping from diet to diet. So I enjoy the skepticism side of things, and that's where I think the conversation today almost needs to start, in terms of, well, why? Why move to a diet that is either plant-focused or plant-based? Like, what is the science? Why is that science to be believed? Why should you believe that? And then when you go and make changes, you're doing so with confidence that this is not just something you're just trying for a bit.
Yeah, well, it's not, for me, it's not about a diet. It's about a complete lifestyle overhaul and a change altogether, because these diets, you know, I go on them for, you know, 6 months, and in the last, say, 12 months, I've lost 15 kilos, and I've done it across 3 or 4 different diets. I don't want a diet. I need a lifestyle change. I want to know what's the reasoning, what are the facts? Because for me, you know, I'm looking at all this information and it's saying that, you know, meat's okay in moderation.
When you say looking at this information, you're talking like the Heart Foundation website.
Yeah, correct. I mentioned that to you the other night, and I mean, I've just brought it up, and they're saying up to 6 eggs a week, eat, you know, 3 bits of fish a week. And then I've got you on the other hand and other friends who have gone plant-based that are saying, no, it's no good for you.
Yeah. Let's start with the Heart Foundation then, and I guess look at, you know, our government in general and the advice that is being given to the public about eating and sort of where that has come from. The Heart Foundation, if you look at the overall framework of what they recommend as a diet, it's one that I agree with from a nutrient point of view. They say it should be low in saturated fat, definitely low in trans fats, because we know that trans fats and saturated fat increase cholesterol, particularly LDL cholesterol, which is an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
Okay.
So just so I can make that a bit easier to understand, LDL cholesterol is basically a fatty type of substance which builds up in the artery, and that can cause a blockage and a narrowing of the vessel, or it can get to a stage where something breaks off and then blocks downstream in an artery, and that can result in a heart attack, or it can result, if it's in the brain, in a stroke. Okay, so we know that diets low in saturated fat and diets low in trans fats are a great thing for reducing cardiovascular disease, and they have that on their website. So I completely agree with that. And it just so happens to be that, so trans fats mostly come from, the trans fats that increase cholesterol mostly come from processed foods. Okay. So that's why there's a strong recommendation just to cut out all ultra processed foods. These are your typical junk foods. Saturated fats, right, are found in the animal kingdom and in the plant kingdom. However, most saturated fat in the Australian diet, in the American diet, comes from animal products. That is clear, with meat and dairy being the top two. Okay. Yes, there are some plant foods with lots of saturated fat, but it's like coconut oil and palm oil. Those are not making up the bulk of calories in people's diets. And in fact, when I recommend a plant-based diet, I tell people to minimize those anyway for that reason, because they are high in saturated fat. But the rest of the plant-based foods, when you're talking about nuts and seeds and legumes, they're not high in saturated fat. They're much higher in unsaturated fats, which are healthy for the heart. When you move from saturated fats to unsaturated.
Can you like unpack that a little further? Because, well, you know, I just think of fat.
Yeah. Okay. So fat, there's different types of fat. Okay. So we're simplifying this, but let's just say there's three categories. Saturated fats, of which there are many within that, trans fats and unsaturated fats. Okay. Three main classes. Saturated fats, we know, increase LDL cholesterol. They're mainly found in animal products. Trans fats, we know, increase LDL cholesterol. This is the bad cholesterol that I was talking about, which increases your risk of having a heart attack or a stroke. Trans fats, we know, are found mainly in ultra-processed foods. They are also found in animal products. However, trans fats in animal products may not affect cholesterol as much as the trans fats in processed foods. And the third class is unsaturated fats. There's different types. I don't want to go into too much detail because it might be a bit much for our first conversation. But the science is really clear. When you move from a diet high in saturated fat, mainly found from animal products, and you swap those calories for calories from unsaturated fat, you reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. That's super clear. Now, on the Australian Heart Foundation's website, they're encouraging that. They're saying we want a diet low in saturated fat. We want a diet higher in the unsaturated fats. We want good amounts of fiber. We want good amounts of fruits and vegetables. And we want to lower trans fats.
Well, I mean, just like what are you touching on that? I mean, one tab I clicked on was recovering from a heart attack. This is the Heart Foundation. I donate money to the Heart Foundation. They're saying, you know, what are eggs high in? There's some sort of fat.
So eggs are high in saturated fat, but also in dietary cholesterol. There's both.
So they're saying eat up to 6 eggs. They're promoting eating eggs. So this is where
they're saying that could be worded better and saying eat no more than 6 eggs a week, which is less than one a day.
Yep. So aim to have two or three serves of fish and seafood per week. And I'm told that, you know, based on the plant-based diet that, fish is just no good.
So I wouldn't necessarily say that. So the reason why they're recommending fish is because it's always what are you eating it instead of? Instead of is where you see the benefit. If you moved from eating legumes to fish, I'd say that is not.
You know what? I don't think I've ever eaten a legume.
So we're going to change that. But what I'm saying is their advice is for the average person. If you're moving from a lot of fatty red meats and chicken and stuff to fish, you will see a benefit. Absolutely. We have to remember it is what you are replacing or displacing in the diet that determines whether it's a healthful or unhealthful move.
Yeah. So if you go from a quarter pound a meal at midday to a piece of fish.
Absolutely. Piece of salmon. See, and I'm all for that. You know, my message, like I was saying the other night, is when I talk about the food component and the science behind the food, when I sought out to find out what on earth we should be eating, I wasn't affected by any sort of ideology or dogma. I didn't come into this from an animal welfare or planetary health. Those things are important to me now. But one thing that I've always said is I will always separate the science from any form of ideology. And that's why when I speak to someone just about nutrition, whilst I might tell them about these other reasons that are compelling to be 100%, it's probably clinically insignificant whether your diet is 85% calories from plants or 100%. I can't sit here right now and tell you that the science is absolutely clear on that. I would be lying and I would be affected by my beliefs about
the planet. Yeah, but where do you draw the line at 85%? You know, how do you measure that 85%? And then
so that's
if it creeps into 80%, is that bad? If it creeps into 75%?
Well, absolutely. So that is another reason, a very valid reason, you know, abstinence and going to 100% for a majority of the public seems to work very well because, you know, let's face it, people are very addicted to certain foods. So that's another compelling reason over and above the animal welfare or the planetary health side of things to go to adopt 100% might be because if you're trying to do it at 85% and you've got that mentality of moderation, it doesn't tend to work for a lot of people.
It wouldn't work for me.
Back to the Heart Foundation. Their diet is very much a diet of moderation, yet they still have the principles that I agree with. Low in saturated fat, low in trans fats, or removed trans fats, sorry, richer in unsaturated fats, getting but enough fiber.
I guess where it really gets under my skin is like the, I guess it gets back to that. We also mentioned hereditary the other night. It's not hereditary. It's what we've been eating for so long. But then they're promoting it. They're saying, yes, they're saying eat this diet, but they're saying that, you know, they even say red meat's fine, like to eat red meat. They're actually recommending that you have a serving of it each week.
Yeah. So again, what they're doing is they're looking at the average consumption of red meat in Australia, which is 116 kilograms per year.
Yeah. But
and their recommendation is somewhat lower than that. What they're doing, Sean, is I don't believe that their guidelines are saying, hey, this is the most optimal diet to prevent and reverse cardiovascular disease. I believe what they're doing is putting a diet out there that they believe will move people into the right direction, is easy for people to adhere to.
Yeah, but surely given the rate of, I don't know what the rate of heart disease and death from heart disease in Australia is, but
it's the leading cause. Yeah. So there is that 1 in 6 people die of cardiovascular disease in Australia.
Yeah, so surely there's tens of thousands of people in the same position of me scared that, and we're told it's hereditary. So, you know, my GP has told me that I need to start doing this, this, and this because, you know, it's hereditary.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my lead-in, I don't know if you know this, when I was 15, I was driving with my dad. We were, you know, the Yarra Valley. So we would do like weekend trips.
Yep.
And we were driving back to his house, which was quite remote in an area called King Lake.
Yep.
Which is, you know, that's 40 odd minutes away from the nearest hospital at least. And that's still like a country hospital.
Yeah, well, you got to go northern.
So we're driving home and he started to develop chest pain and pain down one of his arm. And I believe he knew, like he's a doctor, he knew what was going on, but he sort of thought if he could pretend it wasn't there and deny it within himself, perhaps it would go away. So to me, he didn't let on like it was anything significant. And we got back home to King Lake and then I remember, you know, going to bed and then 2, 3 a.m. hearing all this noise in the kitchen. I'd come out to check on him. You know, he was in bad way by then, having a full-blown heart attack. And at that stage, it was, you know, call the emergency. There was helicopter. He was airlifted to the hospital. And same thing, you know, off the back of that, the advice from the cardiologist to my dad, but also to my brother and I, was that, you know, we should be getting checked and we should be conscious of this because it runs in families. And for the next 10 years, I had a limiting belief and felt somewhat disempowered because I thought, all right, cardiovascular disease, my dad's had it, my grandpa had it, that's going to be my fate. But it wasn't until I started to go into the science and look at, you know, there's studies on twins with the exact same genes, identical twins. They've observed them over time and can therefore see the impact of genes versus environment. And approximately 80% of your fate, your health fate, is your environment, your lifestyle, how you choose to live it. So understanding that is, you know, on the flip side of being told that it is your genes is very, very empowering. And, you know, you just spoke then about the fact, you know, a big contributor is the food. And that's right. And it's because the reason people think it's genetic is because families are following the same diet. Mm. The dad's following the same diet, but it's not just diet. There are other big risk factors for cardiovascular disease. Smoking is a huge one. Drinking alcohol in excess is another big one and not exercising enough, but definitely nutrition, all of those things we have control over. Just building on the sort of the Heart Foundation, because that's sort of where we were before we circled around there. The other thing to consider here is the Australian Dietary Guidelines, which they come out every 10 years. So the current ones were published in 2013. And you would expect that the Dietary Guidelines would be completely independent of any industry, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, aren't they issued by the government?
Well, I mean, on face value, you would presume so. And what's interesting is I did a little research on the 2013 guidelines, because the funny thing is, if every Australian moved and ate the diet of the dietary guidelines, even though I do not agree with them, and I can explain why in a second, our country would be so much healthier. Yeah. Again, they are a step in the right direction.
So I read somewhere that only 6% of people actually follow the...
Yeah, about
was that an article?
About 6%. Yeah, I sent that over. So about 6% of people follow the Australian guidelines. 95% of people do not eat enough fruits and vegetables in Australia, according to the dietary guidelines. 95%. Like,
that's huge.
That's huge. But I wanted to know who came up with these dietary guidelines, because I felt within myself that based on all of the science that I'd read, that these guidelines were not as evidence-based as they could be. And I found that the government puts out a tender, right? So they put out a tender and say to different sort of dietitian associations and experts across Australia, you know, who wants to review the literature and provide advice for the guidelines. And in 2013, that was awarded to the DAA, which is the Dietitians Association of Australia. And the DAA essentially have about 7,500 members of health professionals, mainly dietitians and nutritionists across Australia. They were paid $522,000, I believe. It's all publicly available information online, to perform this review and to instruct the government on what the dietary guidelines should be. In 2013, the DAA was still doing corporate partnerships with the food industry. They had corporate sponsorship funding from Meat and Livestock Association, from Australian Eggs, from Dairy Australia, from Unilever, from Nestle. They were getting all of this money from the food industry, and then we entrusted them with the job of reviewing the literature to advise Australians how to eat.
So they're getting money from these organisations, is what you're saying, and like sponsorship and corporate partnerships, you're saying, and then they're reviewing the guidelines. So how is it independent?
Yeah,
so, and free from bias.
So for me, there is a huge potential for bias there.
Yeah.
The lens in which those folks are reviewing the literature is blurred. It's there is just such an enormous potential for bias there. If we want to truly give the Australian public the best advice, whoever's performing that review has to be completely independent. They have to be. They can't have any commercial agenda or attachment to the food industry. The food industry cannot be influencing how we interpret the science, because quite clearly they want what's best for their companies. They want what's best for them commercially.
Yeah, they want what's best for their bottom line.
So I guess, you know, in short, that kind of sort of highlights why some of the information that I share is different to what's coming from government bodies.
So when we're looking at these dietary guidelines, yes, you agree with the premise of the, you know, low fat and no sugar and XXX. But what I don't understand is, it's the leading cause of death in Australia. Why does it
globally?
Why does it not say anywhere on that website, do not eat meat? If the science, you're telling me your interpretation of the science is saying that this causes heart disease, yes? So why isn't it their interpretation?
So my interpretation is not saying red meat causes cardiovascular disease. That's not my interpretation. There are dietary patterns which increase someone's chance of developing cardiovascular disease. And there are dietary patterns which increase one's bad cholesterol, which is an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. There are dietary patterns which increase blood pressure, again, independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. There are dietary patterns which increase one's chance of being overweight, again, risk factor for cardiovascular disease. As I said before, it is a spectrum. I genuinely believe the diet that they've put on their website, if you wanted to follow that to a T, I think your health would improve. It no doubt would. Coming from your diet now where you're eating a lot of meat, probably a lot of saturated fat, right? A lot of McDonald's in there. You're eating a lot of processed foods.
It's kind of embarrassing.
That's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
It's just a lifestyle thing.
You know, this is nothing that you are purposefully doing wrong. We're in an environment that is often referred to as an obesogenic environment. And that environment...
For me, it just comes down to time.
I
just don't have time to... I don't know. Like when I tried a plant-based diet for a week, like I struggled because where do you buy the food? Like what do you buy?
So
what
this
do you
is,
eat? What we, should you have for lunch? What do you have for dinner? Because for me, everything has had meat. Every lunch and dinner, I looked back like across a year and I'm like, I literally could not remember not having some animal product in one meal.
And I am not for one second denying that there will be a lot of learning and it will be something new, right? You're going to have to learn. You're going to have to put some time in, right? Because you need to appreciate that a lot of these habits that you've got now, that almost society has instilled these into you, right? This is 3 decades worth of habits, right? Yeah. And you have to unlearn some things to relearn. And that requires some dedication. It comes down to how bad you want it. So I would definitely not be just saying, oh, it's easy, don't worry about it, it's going to happen overnight. You know, this is going to be a process. And when we get to the stage of like, how much do you want to change your diet? Because we haven't even spoken if you want to adopt 100% plant-based or where you want to end up. And that's something we can get to. But whatever it is, you're going to have to put certain things in place to be able to increase your knowledge of foods and what eating looks like and learn a new way of
eating. Legumes.
Exactly.
How do you say it?
Like legumes, which legumes. Is, you know, chickpeas and lentils and,
yeah, okay.
and black beans. And,
oh, I eat hummus, so I've had.
You eat hummus, so you're on the chickpea train already.
Bit of hummus and carrot, mate.
And, you know, I think you'll be surprised. Whilst I say you will need to learn some new things, I don't make it out to also be harder than it needs to be. I think that for a lot of people, as they start to change their diet, there's a level of excitement because the typical Australian diet is it lacks diversity. There's very few different ingredients in there. And when you remove those products and you start to enjoy a whole host of new plant-based foods and new recipes and whatnot, I think for many people, the appreciation of food goes to that next level.
Yep.
Now, we're talking about cardiovascular disease and something that I think would be really important for you to feel right now is that, you know, you're sitting in front of me and for all intents and purposes, yes, your diet's a bit unhealthy, but you're a functioning healthy guy. You know, you went for a surf today, you work hard, you know, you are from the outside a very functioning healthy person.
Yeah.
Right? But something that I know it really scared me when I was reading the research on particularly in cardiovascular disease was even though you don't have symptoms of cardiovascular disease right now, these changes that we make to your diet are not so much about prevention. We're more than likely, given your lifestyle habits of smoking, excessive drinking at certain periods, and the diet over decades, we're most likely actually going to be reversing disease.
Yeah.
So asymptomatic disease. And there was a study done after the North Korean War. And they American soldiers who had been killed by wound, by gunfire. So these were not guys, these were average age, I think between 17 and mid 20s, right? Deployed over there, North Korea, killed by gun wound. And then they did autopsies on their bodies. And this really shook the world of science and cardiovascular disease research because what they identified was that these seemingly very healthy males had moderate and in some cases severe blockages of their arteries. And what that told us was that these diseases might show up in terms of events in your 40s, sometimes in your late 30s. Which, you know, is not too far from where you are now.
Well, as I said, my older brother's already had a heart attack. He's had two now.
How old's he?
He's 30. I'm 32. He's 35. And he's, you know, within the next 12 months, he'll be an amputee on both legs because of the circulation to his legs. I don't know too much about it, but I know.
Well, he has diabetes, right?
No.
Doesn't have diabetes.
Doesn't have diabetes. No. So he was born.
Oh, he had grafts taken from his legs though, right?
No, they tried the... to bypass his legs, yeah. and they can't actually do it because of his arteries aren't you know, they're too
functioning well enough.
Yeah,
okay.
So, and that's, I mean, we've eaten a very similar diet our whole lives, and yeah, I just can't believe. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of shocked things and put things, you know, at mm-hmm. the forefront for me as well, because I like my legs. So, as silly as that.
I mean, well, that's why we're here today, you know.
Like, but I mean, it's I get so lost in it, like protein.
Yeah.
Where do I get protein for? You say, go get a protein. I don't think of a protein shake. I think of a bit of steak or some chicken. So, you know, you got your protein, your fats and your carbs. And for me, that's, you know.
Yeah. I think just quickly finishing on that story and then we'll jump into that. The point I was trying to make there is that these blockages are probably already building up. The arteries are probably already narrowing.
Yep.
You know, same for me. You know, I feel like when I changed my diet, I feel like I was not just setting myself up to prevent disease. I feel like I was actually going to be undoing some of the damage that I'd done. And the body is amazing. And we can talk about some of the trials that do show that you can undo some of that damage. You can open the vessels up and you can actually have healthier vessels later in life than you did earlier with the right changes to your lifestyle. Your point about protein and carbohydrates and fat, we can definitely go into these and talk about each one, right? But it brings me to something that's really, really important, and that is nutritionism. And nutritionism is this idea and this sort of paradigm within society, mainly pushed by the food industry, to have us distracted from what really matters, which is the food source. And if you know, you only have to walk down your grocery aisle to see every box either says high fiber or high protein or low fat, you know, or we see meat as protein. And really, we have become so distracted by that we now value our diet on hitting those nutrients rather than valuing our diet on the diet quality, which is the overall eating pattern. And it's looking at the foods. We don't need to be zooming in and obsessing over the protein and the fat and the carbohydrates if we're choosing the right foods. And that's one of the things I like about 100% plant-based diet, whole food, is that that's covered for you. And when you do that...
Well, you mentioned before that there are bad plant-based foods.
Correct. So when I talk about food sources, one of those things is identifying, say, for example, I said coconut oil and palm oil, right? Is knowing that, okay, within my diet, I'm going to minimize those, right? I'm going to try and stick to whole foods that are in the form as close to they were existing in nature, minimally processed foods. And naturally, when you do that, you are eating a diet that is low in saturated fat, is high in fiber, bucket loads of protein, more than you need. Easy to do, and we can talk about how to optimize that, because I know that's still transitioning. We have very much been conditioned to make sure, where am I getting my protein, right? Mm. And the thing is, what people should be more concerned about is the fact that no one in Australia is protein deficient, but everyone, or 96% of people, are fiber deficient. But the funny thing is, we obsess over protein because that's what's been marketed to us. The point is, when you adopt this overall dietary pattern, the macronutrients take care of themselves, right? And I know that is a little challenging to get your mind around, because it goes against everything that we've learned and what we've been taught is important. But coming back to the food industry, they've placed that belief within us, protein, whether that's coming from the protein shake industry or from us seeing meat as protein. And on the front of the processed food, things like high protein to distract us from the fact that there's a lot of sugar in there and there's a lot of artificial ingredients.
Well, to be honest, man, I didn't even know you could get any protein from plant-based, like vegetables and salads and that sort of thing. So
yeah, I mean, there is protein pretty much in every single plant food at a varying level. There are higher protein plant foods. And you can get amino acids. Have you heard of amino acids before?
Yep.
So amino acids are what make up protein. That's what protein are made from.
Yeah. What is protein?
Example of protein is collagen. Okay. So have you heard of collagen before? It's the most abundant protein in your body. It's in your skin, it's in your cartilage, and in your joints.
The stuff that goes in lips.
That's an injectable collagen, different product. But that's an example of a protein. And these proteins are made out of essential and non-essential amino acids. So essential amino acids, as their name suggests, are ones that we must get through our diet. Non-essential amino acids our body can make. Providing we're eating enough food, it can make those. The essential amino acids, all of them, all nine, there's eight. Sometimes people refer to nine, sometimes people refer to eight. All of the essential amino acids, where do they start? They start in plants. The only way they make their way into the animal kingdom is either an animal eats the plants or an animal eats the animal that ate the plants. All protein starts and originates plant form. It's where they all come from. They all come from the ground.
So how do we start eating meat? If it was so bad for us and we shouldn't have done it.
Okay. It's a fascinating question. It's one that I've wanted to explore, and often I've been challenged on it before. And to be honest, I just wanted to understand, like, how did our ancestors eat? Because I think that's important.
I mean, because we're descendant of
Descendant. Yeah. Well, we're descendant. I mean, people have different beliefs.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But let's just say, physiologically, it seems that we are descendants. They're our ancestors, right?
Yeah.
But what makes sense is that if you go out and you look at, say, giraffes and they're in a zoo, what do they get fed? They get fed the diet that they've always eaten forever. Same thing with rhinos or apes or whatever, that we feed them the diet that they've always had. It's humans that have moved away from an ancestral type of diet.
But is that because us as a species, we're adaptable, we evolve?
Yeah, which is this is a really interesting topic. And it's something I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I haven't spoken much about it, but we can maybe jump into something that I've been thinking about in a minute. But essentially, if you go back and look at sort of paleo man, and there's different types of tribes, and they had varying diets. But on the whole, paleo sort of hunter-gatherer tribes, they were getting about 100 grams of fiber a day, right? And the meat was very much a small part of their overall diet. It was when they were lucky enough to catch something, that the men would bring it back, but very much the women and the kids who were gathering food were providing the predominant amount of calories in those diets. And the meat that they were eating was, similar today, they say, to like an antelope. It was woolly mammoth. And woolly mammoth's not around today, but woolly mammoth, the fat profile of that meat was super low in saturated fats, very high in polyunsaturated fats. It's a different product to what's coming out of the feedlots today. So this idea of going back and looking what our ancestors ate, I think it's an interesting one. I don't necessarily think, though, that we have to follow exactly what our ancestors ate. I think that, as you said, we adapt, right? And we adapt to survive, correct?
Yeah.
We adapt to survive. We are omnivores. Definitely we're omnivores. We can eat meat. We can eat plants. We can eat a combination or one of. What that means, though, is we have the choice. We have a choice of what we want to eat as an omnivore, whereas herbivores must eat plants and carnivores must eat meat. Humans have a choice. And
so why do we make what you're saying science-based is the wrong choice?
Sorry, I'm not following that.
So you're saying that we have a choice to eat a certain way. And I know I choose to eat a lot of chocolate.
No, what I'm saying is, in terms of how we fuel our body, our digestive systems can process animal foods and process plant foods.
We've adapted to be able to do that
to
as
do
a
both.
Species.
I'm not saying that that is necessarily the most optimal, right? For example, the Inuit population, they only ate animal products.
Yep.
Now, they didn't have great life expectancy and they did get cardiovascular disease. There are other examples of similar. Now, what I'm saying is the fact that our digestive system allows us to eat animal products or plant products means that we can digest and take nutrients out of both foods. The science that we have today tells us that if we want to eat to get nutrients but to also optimize our health for the long term, to avoid chronic disease, to have a greater health span, which is, you know, more years and more years full of life, then we want to have a diet that is plant predominant. Okay. The majority of the calories coming from plant foods. And if you go and look at the apes, they are getting the majority of their calories as well from plant foods.
But apes don't, do apes eat meat? They're getting everything from plant-based foods, aren't they?
Yeah. So, I mean, some, there's...
Do they eat animal products at all?
They sometimes eat each other.
But, yeah, but isn't
only,
it when
only if they're starving. Yeah. Only if they're absolutely starving.
Mate, if I was hungry, I'd eat you.
and sometimes they might eat insects on their way through eating the plant foods because it's in there. But then they're not sort of going out of their way to eat animal foods.
They don't hunt like lions.
Hey friends, I hope you're enjoying this episode. It's Simon here. Just a quick intermission to remind you that my book, The Proof is in the Plants, is now available. In this book, I cover common myths about plant-based diets, evidence showing the potential health benefits that are up for grabs, the positive impact eating plant foods has on the planet, and much more. To order your copy, head to plantproof.com/book. plantproof.com/book. Okay, let's get back into it.
So recapping and flipping that back around, we were talking about protein. Whether you look at a carnivore like a lion, that animal is a carnivore. It eats meat and it can turn that into muscle. You look at a herbivore like these apes. They eat plants or like a horse and they turn it into muscle. So what that tells us is the actual origin of the nutrient is irrelevant. It's what your digestive tract is set up. Can you digest plant foods? Can you digest animal foods? And if you can digest both, you have a choice. And that's where you let science come in and you say, okay, well, if I have a choice, what does science show us is the healthiest choice?
I don't like having a choice, to be honest. I want to know what is, what I should, and just do it.
Yeah, so that's what is a plant-predominant diet. There's compelling reasons to go 100%, and that can be because you feel like you will stick to the diet better. You'll adhere to it in the long term and be less likely to fall into your old ways of eating.
Yep. There's certain things for me that I'm just going to have to completely rule out. So obviously, you know, the chocolate, you know, obviously I'm a salesman, so I'm on the road 70% of the day and just drive through just works for me. So, you know, there may be, I've got 45 minutes to get to a meeting and it's lunchtime and I haven't eaten since, you know, I haven't eaten at all that day. I just go through a drive-thru, McDonald's, Hungry Jack's, KFC, and I know when I'm going through, I know that it's no good for me, but I have this hunger and I need to eat. So I guess I'm just going to have to rule certain things out, but it's, you know, I'll take it back to what I said earlier about what to eat. How do I know what to eat?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things that we will do off the back of this episode is review everything that you've been eating. And I will come up with some very simple substitutes. We might find that it's better to do baby steps with, you know, it doesn't have to be overnight. It doesn't have to be, because that can sometimes be a bit overwhelming. And in fact, for your gut health, right, it may make more sense for us to do some gradual changes where we change one or two meals a day, or we look at some of your common dinners and we say, okay, that's stir fry. Let's change the chicken in that stir fry to tempeh. Now, you've probably never heard what tempeh is, but these little substitutes, right? We're going to change your...
What is tempeh?
So tempeh is a fermented legume, fermented bean.
Is that soy?
It can be, or it can be chickpea.
While we're here, soy, like estrogen, growing boobs, like isn't it for like bad for males to have estrogen, soy?
Okay. Let's jump into this while we're on it, and then we'll circle back. The soy does not contain estrogen. It contains phytoestrogen, right? So phytoestrogen is essentially it's a plant compound that can attach to the same receptor as estrogen in the body.
Okay.
It doesn't exert, soy has not been shown to exert estrogenic effects to the point that you should be worried about it, be concerned about it. The evidence is so lacking that the majority of people point to a N equals one person case study of a guy eating 15 to 21 serves a day.
So a coffee substitute for milk
could be soy,
be one serving.
Yeah, or it could be almond. Yeah, so a cup of soy milk would be one serving.
Yeah.
But the Cancer Council, they recommend soy within a healthy diet. They promote a healthy diet as being a diet that contains more plant-based foods. And so if soy was affecting one's hormones, then you definitely wouldn't see the Cancer Council recommending it, because it would be essentially increasing the chances of hormonal cancers, breast cancer or prostate cancer.
Well, do they recommend meat?
They recommend limiting meat because of colorectal cancer. Or minimizing.
So why would that surprise you if they recommended soy?
They say to remove. They definitely say to either reduce or remove red meat completely.
Yeah.
In their guidelines, and that's due to the associations between red meat and colorectal cancer, which are fairly strong. But coming back to estrogen, so there is no estrogen in soy. It's phytoestrogen. It acts completely differently. There are studies, for and against. It's very weak evidence. There are some studies showing it's protective. But dairy, on the other hand, actually contains estrogen, which is the mammalian hormone, right? Because dairy, essentially, it's a hormonal fluid. It contains estrogen. So if you are worried about estrogen, then there is more to be concerned by the consumption of dairy than there is by consuming soy. If you're still worried...
That's the other thing. It's tough, dairy.
If you're still worried about soy, then that's okay. You don't have to eat soy. You can still do a plant-based diet without soy. Absolutely. You can go and get an almond milk or a cashew milk. And instead of eating, soy-based tempeh or whatnot, you can have chickpeas and lentils and things like that. It's fine. It's not the end of the world. I think there's nothing to be concerned by having a small amount of soy, particularly if it's non-GMO soy, which is organic soy. It's available everywhere. Within a diet,
it's bonsoi.
Bonsoi is organic. It's soy is a good source of protein, and it's fairly widely available at most grocery stores. So I would say within your diet, if you're having one or two serves a day, it's a great replacement for meat. And there are studies showing when you remove red meat and you swap it with a soy protein food like a tofu or even if it was edamame, cholesterol goes down. Okay. So you're moving in that right direction of reducing your risk of a cardiovascular event.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Okay. B12, what is it? And why anyone I've spoken to about plant-based diets, why they say you're going to have to get a B12 supplement?
Yeah. So one of the really funny things is when you change your diet to a plant-based diet or a vegan diet, everyone around you becomes a nutrition expert.
Yeah, I know.
And it, one of the funny things is everyone goes, oh, but B12 and usually
that... I've got people who don't even have a plant-based diet advising me on what I should be eating.
And but one of these things, yeah, is that they... People get so interested in what you're doing and wanting to talk about the B12, whilst they're eating a typical standard Australian or American diet full of processed foods. And it's like, hang on, you're asking me about one little nutrient whilst you're eating foods that are increasing your blood pressure, increasing your cholesterol, and a whole lot of other things at the same time. It's bemusing sometimes, but it is a question that pops up. And what I think about that is you're making all of these healthy shifts in your diet, which are protective against disease. And it is true, you do need to supplement B12. And you need to supplement B12 because B12 in today's environment is only found in animal products. And I see clear benefit with saying, I'm going to take a B12 supplement, because rather than getting it from animal products and getting everything that it comes along with, I'm getting it by itself and I'm able to eat whole plant foods that are improving my health and moving me in the right direction.
So what is B12?
Vitamin B12, it's a B vitamin, and it has an important role, particularly in our nervous system. And here's the thing, you take your B12 supplement, you do not need to worry about B12. Clinically shown, prevents and reverses B12 deficiency, and B12 and populations, they've done on numerous studies where vegans are supplementing B12. They have less deficiency than the omnivores. So B12 deficiency itself is not just a vegan thing. It actually can exist in omnivores. And now that there's so much education about it, and all and vegans should be, if you're not, please do, taking B12, vegans should have no issue with B12.
Yeah. So I wrote a couple of questions down. So I'm just kind of having a look at them as we're talking. One thing I found when I went plant-based for a week is, mind you, I did feel fantastic. I felt lighter, felt like I had more energy, but I found it quite expensive. Yet I wasn't buying meat, and meat was usually the most expensive thing. And I looked through the shopping docket and I was buying the imitation meats. Now, I don't understand why. Is it, are they just doing these imitation meats because it's what we're so used to eating? Like a burger, a sausage, yeah. a, you know, like I had chicken made out of soy and it was said pretty much said chicken on it. Now, surely these, like, are these imitation products good to eat? Are they a good source of food, or are they, should I look at them more as a transition food?
So the latter, it tends to be correct, right? I see them as filling a gap and helping people realize that they don't have to rely on animal foods. But I would say approach with a level of caution. The science about a plant-focused or plant-based diet being healthy is not based on eating these products. It's based on eating whole foods in their form as close to found in nature. And yes, there are a bunch of new vegan products out in the market. And yes, that's great because it means more people can reduce their meat consumption.
But surely they can't be all that good for you.
Well, the thing is, a lot of these are made by the same companies that have sold processed foods and whatnot for decades. And of course, when they see a market's growing, they move into that market.
Yeah, just opportunities.
So there is an opportunity there for them to make money. My advice for people is to, if you want to use them while you're transitioning, great. But eventually get to a place where they are not in your diet, or they're just a very small amount. You know, maybe it's when you go around to your friend's house or you eat out somewhere. But the majority of your calories across the week, you're getting from foods as close to their form in nature. And when you're doing that, you're definitely moving in the right direction. Now, it can depend on a case-by-case scenario with some of those products, depending on how processed they are and what's added in. And that's where it pays to read the nutritional information panel and the ingredients. If the ingredients doesn't sound like real food, then it sounds like a whole lot of things being added. And again, approach with caution.
Yeah, I guess that's one thing I was looking at. But again, I don't understand what a lot of these, you know, would you call them additives?
Additives, yeah.
Yeah, what they are is, I don't know. I just simply don't know.
Yeah,
what they
I think the rule is if you don't know what they are, then they probably don't really resemble food.
I didn't
food.
Even know what tempura, what is it?
Tempeh.
Tempeh. I didn't even know what tempeh was. And so, I still don't, to be honest.
There will be, we're going to have to get you up to speed on a few terms, but not a lot, and give you confidence in knowing what are healthy substitutes. When you want to reduce the eggs, what are you going to substitute it for?
Well, see, that's another big problem, breakfast. And you know what? I've been doing a bit of research and breakfast is like, isn't it like a made-up meal? Like, do we don't even need breakfast, do we?
Well, it's been marketed to us as the most important meal
of the day.
Absolutely. And, you know, that can trace back to whether it's, you know, Wheat Bix and milk in the morning.
Well, for me, I've spent the last 12 months on and off intermittent fasting and black coffee only up until midday. And I tell you what, I've never felt better. Lighter, sharper in the mind as well, and just energy. Opposed to, you know, my local cafe, get my flat white with everything. I have an egg. I get the healthy salad, crack an egg on top. You know, eggs on toast. Eggs is always a big part of my diet when I eat out at a cafe for breakfast. So, you know, how do I stop eating eggs? You know, what do I supplement that for? And
yeah, so you can.
Do I look at a supplement like supplementing it, or do I look at like just going?
No, you don't need to take vitamins and minerals in place of
supplementing.
I would say, yeah, I would say you can determine
on top of my salad.
You can work out. I wasn't sure where you were going with that. the options there are. You can say, okay, I'd like to have a similar experience. And in that case, learn how to make a tofu scramble, which takes 5 minutes maximum to make. Absolutely delicious. I'll make one for you as an example, and you know, you'll be able to repeat that.
Could you do it now by any chance? I'm pretty hungry.
All right, I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay, guys, it's just me now, so.
So you can do that, and yep. Or you know, a chickpea omelet. Again, I can show you how to make that. And again, that doesn't take that long. It takes a little bit longer probably than a tofu scramble. But a tofu scramble, literally 5 minutes, done, okay? Probably no longer than really making eggs. Or you can change altogether what your breakfast looks like, and you might do overnight oats. So you might soak oats overnight in an almond milk or whatever. And in the morning, we'll put some chia seeds or hemp seeds and flax and maybe a little bit of fruit on there. And that's a really high fiber. There's protein in there that'll fill you up until lunchtime. Or fasting, as you said, great strategy. I'm all for it. I don't think that we understand fasting completely yet and the sort of true potentials of it. But
have you done much research on it?
I've done a fair bit of research on it and I've utilized it myself. I think it's a very valuable tool. I think it's a great tool. I personally love the idea of not eating until midday. Sometimes I'll extend it to 1 or 2 o'clock. I listen to my body. If I've eaten a lot the day before, then I'll do the same as you.
And is that something you do on a regular basis?
Absolutely.
Yep.
And what the biggest thing that I find, the biggest reason I use that as a tool is literally listen to my body. Did I eat a bit too much the day before? I'm going to fast tomorrow. And what that's going to do is it's just naturally going to lower my calories the next day because simply less hours of eating.
Yep.
And it just helps adjust for any days or potentially, you know, on the weekend, you've got a lot of social things on. You've got Christmas or Boxing Day. You've got, you know, I'm going to be consuming a lot of calories. Maybe on the Friday and on the Monday, you fast. Things like that. That's where I find it is a useful tool personally. So that's eggs. But what we're talking about here is very much, these are very common questions, Sean, what you're getting about protein. And as I said, you're going to get more than enough protein. We can talk about optimizing your protein. And
see what? I don't even understand why I've got the mindset to optimize my protein.
Well, it's very much driven by the industry of people selling products. We've been led to believe we need more protein than we actually need. And the funny thing is, do you know what happens when you have excess protein in the body? No, it's converted to fat.
Is it?
Excess protein in the body beyond what your calorie, what your utilizing as energy is converted to fat.
So why I'm fat?
So people think that over and above excess protein is a great thing. It's not. Yes, you need enough protein. And yes, I want people to eat a diverse range of foods. That's important because then you get a good balance of the different amino acids. But that comes with literally just eating a wide range of whole grains, which we will go through. I think we need to unpack this in a future episode and go through each food group. Whole grains, legumes, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. When you focus on those food groups and you get your calories out of those are whole plant-based foods. And when you're getting a nice balance, you're getting more than enough protein.
Look, the other thing to look at is, you know, where I work hard, you know, and I've, you know, got to where I'm at and, you know, I eat certain foods as a, you know, to enjoy my life. You know, food's something to be enjoyed. So, you know, like when I'm going, I think of say for example, tonight I want to go to Mason's and I want to eat, you know, the chicken there. I love the chicken there. I guess maybe it's too early for me to even be asking this question, but because I don't understand the taste and there's so many foods that I'm going to be introduced to. Like, do you really enjoy the food you eat now? Like, I mean,
absolutely,
because we've known each other a long time, and
so, and I'm just going to be completely truthful here.
Yeah,
I never ever once think about meat. I never think about chicken, and you know me, I was a meat eater.
Yeah,
I had the bro diet.
Yeah, well, we lived together Manchester, and so, you taught me how to cook. You know, what was it? Chicken curry.
We lived there in 2014 or 13 or something.
Yeah, it was
like
thereabouts,
that. And I never thought that I would live a lifestyle and not be consuming animal products. I never thought that. That was never on the cards for me. And also, I think if you had asked me, I would have been like, oh, well, how could I ever do that? Like, I'm going to be craving that. And I understand that. So I understand the position you're in. And I understand that there is nothing I can say right now to give you peace of mind over that, other than the fact that I can sit here and honestly say, I never think about it. I never sit down at a menu and if I sit down at a menu that has vegan options, vegan things on the menu and non-vegans, I never read the other things. My mind never, ever. I can't remember. Like,
but
ever.
Don't you look at it and go, oh, that tastes good. Like, do no, you remember never. The taste? You don't?
Honestly, I scan the menu for the V.
Come on, cheese.
I absolutely promise you. I scan the menu for the V or the whatever symbol represents vegan. And I hyper-focus in on those.
So,
and that's how I choose my food.
So you're at a point now where, like, what was the one food you liked to eat? Was it chicken, cheese?
No, it was eggs.
Milk, eggs, okay.
Eggs, I stopped having milk long before this change.
Yeah, yeah.
It was eggs were the last thing.
Yep.
And a little bit of fish. But eggs were definitely the last thing. And I think for me, to be convinced, I had to realize that what I was sacrificing, and I put that in sort of
quotations
yeah. because I'm not on video here, but I put that in there because at the time I felt like I was sacrificing. I was like, wow, I'm giving this up. I'm sacrificing. And I didn't realize that I was actually gaining way more than what I was leaving behind. And now when I look back, I can see that and it's very vivid. So what it took was understanding that the other options and the alternatives and what I would be eating was abundant in new flavors and tastes and I wasn't missing out on anything. And honestly, you know, I remember the first year of navigating through that, my mind was blown. I realized how crap my diet was and I realized I had such high appreciation for food. And I genuinely think if you throw yourself into this and you're open to the idea of learning new things, I think that you will also share that experience. And as I said before, you know, it sounds like you want to do a bit of an all or nothing play and get to 100%.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here and that is based on you understanding your personality. But I'm sitting here advising you on nutrition and I'm not saying it has to be all or nothing. If you got to that, you know, 80, 90%, I think that'd be fantastic. But I'm also here to support 100% move as well. And in fact, I believe that there's other compelling reasons to do that. The key is going to be coming back to, okay, what are you removing from diet? What are we going to replace that with so that you still get enjoyment? So you don't feel like you're missing out on things. And, you know, and a realistic expectation from you as well, understanding that these are new foods, taste buds change, yeah. Right? Introducing something once, it may not work. You may not love it on the first time. That's okay. We'll work around it. Maybe there's certain foods that you don't like chewing at the moment and we'll work them into a smoothie. And in 4 weeks, you might be at a stage there where your taste buds have adjusted and kale all of a sudden is something that you can eat. That's just an example. All of these things, there are ways, there are tools, there are steps that can be taken to get you to a position where you will be sitting like I am here, hopefully, not thinking about any of these foods that you're leaving behind and that decades of culture have instilled in you and made you sort of fall in love with. You will have a new love for new foods, but foods that are actually doing the right thing by you. And that's where we want to get to.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. I agree it's going to be tough, but I think something that is...
I've got the drive to do it though. I mean, I keep coming back to.
Gotta remember why you want to do it.
Yeah, I just keep coming back to
why do you want to do it?
I can't believe I'll get back to that, but I just cannot believe like how prevalent cardiovascular disease is worldwide, but in Australia in particular, and how more people aren't doing this. Like, is it just education? Do they not know, or do they just like excuse my French, but so they just not give a shit?
You know, this is a very big question to unpack and something I've written about this. This is so multifaceted. It's not funny. We need to think about privilege in this context as well. There are people that are not in our position right now. They don't have the time to sit here and do this. Mm. They don't necessarily have the money, right, to have the time to do this. And they're living on a week-to-week paycheck with 5 kids and they're doing their best, right? And you know, so that's again why I just encourage people to make, depending on their personal circumstances, to make small changes where they can.
But I mean, like as a, you know, I'd like to think I'm a caring person to a certain degree. If I was to have kids, if I was feeding them meat, based with the knowledge you've given me just in the past 5 days, I'd be promoting cardiovascular disease to them. You know, like you say they're doing their best, but wouldn't doing your best be doing what I'm doing and reaching out to yourself, learning what I'm learning, like asking these questions? Well, isn't that doing your best?
I think absolutely. But I also think you got to put yourself into there. Well, you know, you 10 years ago, right? You weren't necessarily, everyone's on a different journey.
Yeah.
And it may just not have triggered yet for them that to realize that they need to learn more. And they're feeding their families what they know and what they believe is the best way to eat because everyone's doing it.
Well, my dad taught me how to cook and everything had a bit of like an animal product in it.
And I was the same. And for, you know, not one second do I think my parents were intentionally feeding me foods that were not as healthy as could be.
I know at the time he genuinely believed that was the healthiest option possible.
And we need to understand that information is evolving. Science is evolving. There's more ways now in 2019-20 of sharing and spreading information that our parents didn't have. They didn't have access to that. They'd have to go to the library and sit down and try and decipher things, often in, you know, really technical terms. And they didn't have podcasts like this. It's a different era. We're so privileged now to be able to share information and help people and help more people. So, you know, why are more people not doing this? I guess that was your question. And it comes back to the environment. We live in an environment that favors the quick and convenient foods are usually the most unhealthy.
Yeah, well, I'm guilty for that on every day. Every day in my work life, it's all about convenience.
And so let's let that sit for a second, right? So what I'm saying is that a lot of the decisions that we make that are poor in terms of our diet are a result of our environment. So our chat today and what we go through and whatnot, it's not going to change the environment. You're still going to walk into the same environment. When you leave a session with me and you are driving to work or whatever, you're still in that same environment. So that temptation's not going to go. The environment's not going to change. I would love it to change. I think the government needs to make significant changes in terms of subsidizing healthier foods, changing marketing regulations like they've done with tobacco, changing marketing to kids. There's a whole host of policy changes.
Yeah, but I mean, tobacco, wasn't that research available like 40, 50 years ago?
So, I mean, I could talk about this stuff for hours and hours. The tobacco industry, yes, you know, it was known in the 40s, as early as the 40s, that smoking was causing cancer. And again, I'm going to put causing in quotation marks because someone's probably going to send me a message and say it was based off epidemiology. But and epidemiology is, these are studies where we follow people over a long time period of time and observe them in their natural environment.
Yeah, in their environment, yes.
And because it's an observational study over time, it's very hard to attribute a cause to an effect because is it smoking or is it something else that they're doing in their lifestyle? But there's, you know, when there's 7,000 plus studies associating smoking to cancer, it's compelling enough that the World Health Organization have said smoking causes cancer. But yeah, you're right. Like there was so much science in the 40s and then in the 50s in the general surgeon report, but really the doctors weren't educating patients to quit. And there wasn't, you know, marketing restrictions. Marketing restrictions were much later, but the doctors weren't recommending people to quit for decades later. You know, and a lot of the time that was, you know, doctors were still smoking themselves. You know, I have an enormous amount of respect for our doctors. And when it comes to nutrition, whilst things are changing really rapidly and there's this big lifestyle medicine movement, which is great, and people and doctors seem thirsty now to learn about nutrition, when you look at nutrition courses across the globe, on average, they do about 20, 24 hours of nutrition across a four-year course. And we place so much trust in our doctors, as we should. We believe we expect them to understand everything, but the reality is that they haven't had the training to understand how to coach someone through health, what a healthy diet actually looks like. And they also see patients for 15 minutes. And when the patient leaves, often with a prescription, which, and again, I'm not anti-Western medicine. I think Western medicine also helps extend and save lives and it plays a role. But we need to be leveraging Western medicine as much as we're leveraging diet. And often the time these patients go into the clinic and diet often doesn't even come up. And if it does come up, it's skimmed over because the doctor perhaps doesn't feel confident in talking about it. And what happens is they walk straight back outside into the same obesogenic environment, script in hand. And, you know, unfortunately, our whole healthcare system, and I'm talking about Australia, is set up to manage disease, not to prevent it.
Well, I guess a big thing for me is also with making this sort of change is I just need the what is. I want to not think about the food. And that's why I find myself in a McDonald's drive-thru or a Hungry Jack's drive-thru. And yeah, like for, you know, I do take, you know, more often than not, actually that's a lie, I do take the the healthier option, which would be the chicken wrap and a bottle of water. I do take that sometimes, but you know, it's about convenience. I just want to completely stop thinking about the food in general and just find a way to just go plant-based, know that it's the right thing to do, be confident and it's the right thing to do, and just a step-by-step path on how to do so.
Which we will, I think we should unpack that in a episode following on from here. I think we need to dedicate a good amount of time to going through that.
Yep.
What that looks like at home in terms of preparation, in terms of staples in your household, because you'll need some new staple items, setting up the fridge, how you can do it and not break the budget. What is the budget? How are we going to do this?
It's another big thing for me.
We can do it. What we're talking about at its core, forget the fancy mock meats for a second. We're talking about a diet that ultimately was fed to slaves. It's peasant food. That's the reality of it, right? We're going to make it taste. That doesn't make it sound attractive.
No,
okay,
I was thinking of meat just then.
Yeah, that's real. but I'm just bringing it down to the point that this is food that people fed to slaves, right? And it doesn't have to be expensive. We'll go through that. We'll unpack it. How do we set up the fridge? What are the weekly things that you're going to purchase? How do you do it on a budget? What about if you eat out? What are things to consider when you're eating out?
Yeah, what are things to avoid?
What about if you're caught out in a situation? What do you do? What about if you need to eat on the go or prepare a snack for work? And if we talk through each of these and then set you up with different options, lots of options. Having options is the key.
Yeah.
Right? Lots of options. So you never feel like you're unsure what to do. And also you can keep some level of interest and diversity because no one wants to eat the exact same thing. And we'll get you moving on the right track, right? And as I said, your taste buds will start to evolve. You'll get a greater appreciation for new foods, foods that are actually nourishing your body. You're going to lose weight. I know that's one of your goals.
Yeah, it's a big goal. Single. Got to look good for the ladies.
Hey friends, me again. Quick note to let you know, I have a brand new, completely complimentary 2-week plant-based meal plan on my website. Inside contains delicious breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snack recipes, along with a complete breakdown of the nutritional information for each. Whether you're looking to add one plant-based meal to your weekly regime or go full plant, I'm sure you'll find this resource helpful. You can get your copy today at plantproof.com/meal plan. That's plantproof.com/meal plan. Okay, let's get back into it. I know you're joking. Well, you're semi-joking. I know there is a vanity aspect to weight.
100%. No doubt.
But we spoke about weight being a very big risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
Well, so, I look at the BMI chart and I'm 7 kilos overweight. So
you're, what are you weighing at the moment?
When I got to Bali, I was 90, but I've had a bit of a splurge while I was here. Bit of chocolate and a couple of burgers. I think I weighed myself 92.7 or 8, and that was a couple of days ago at the gym. So I've eaten a bit more chocolate and burgers since. So
yeah, the cutting out the processed foods, ultra processed foods, so those chocolate bars and whatnot. That's the low hanging fruit.
Yeah,
right? It's definitely not fruit, but it's low hanging fruit in terms of we have clear science. I think I told you there's a great study where they metabolic ward study. So that means that we get subjects into a hospital and we're going to feed them in a hospital so we know exactly what they've eaten and they can't eat anything else. So it's a higher level of control than doing a trial where people go back home and you say, hey, follow this diet. So they're in the metabolic ward and it's a crossover trial. So they do 2 weeks with one diet and then the same people do 2 weeks on a different diet. And they measure how many calories they're eating and how much body fat they put on. So two diets. One diet, unprocessed, whole food-based. Second diet, ultra-processed. But what they've done is they've matched both meals.
With the same amount of calories.
Different calories. Sorry, they give... Let me come to that. It was an unrestricted calorie experiment. So what they did, though, they matched the meals with protein, fat, carbohydrate, salt, and sugar.
Okay, so they'd have unlimited amount.
Yes,
of food.
Unlimited amount of food. Okay. But what that one of them and what they wanted to know was, okay, let's. So literally, the only difference is that one's processed and one is whole food, right? And they even matched to fiber, and that's the interesting thing, because fiber is often spoken about as very satiating. And tends to be why people think whole foods are, people that eat more whole foods have a lower BMI. What they found was on average, when you had the processed foods, ultra-processed foods, that they were consuming 500 calories more per day. So they believe that it was largely due to with the processed foods, ultra-processed foods, people could eat them faster. And there was a delay in the hormone that tells you you're full. So they were overeating, overfeeding.
Yeah, okay.
So over the course of the two weeks, it was differences in kilos in terms of weight gained. So you can imagine how that plays out day in, day out over a year, right?
Maybe we should do something to track my transformation as such.
I think we will. And yeah. And you've already had some success, like you spoke about before. You made changes, right? With your diet, and you've lost how much weight to date?
I think now it's about 13 kilos.
Yeah,
so I put a couple on,
and a lot of what you were sort of describing. I don't know if we went through this on here or we went through this in person.
No, I think it was last night.
Yeah,
we had a bit of a chat.
But so I mean, give me a rundown of how you've lost that weight so far, because I know that it wasn't anything radical.
Yeah. Well, I guess one of the biggest thing is was active. I was not active at all. I'd work, I'd come home, and I'd pretty much sit on a couch and I'd eat junk food, Alan's party mix and the block of chocolate. Now, I'm embarrassed to say that I actually ate one of those pretty much every night.
A whole block of Cadbury chocolate,
yeah,
and a whole party mix.
Bag of party mix. So,
which is a bit, you know, in a sitting, I'm going to approximately guess is 1,200 to 1,500 calories.
Between the two of them.
Between the two.
Yeah. So I'd have kind of one or the other most nights, but every other night I'd probably have both.
And what was that based on? Was that a reward for something, or what, just how you were feeling?
I don't know. I think I'd just come home and it's somehow it started. I mean, as a kid, we always had chocolate in the fridge, and whenever I got my hands on it, I ate it all. And we always had lollies there. So I think they were always just there. And then I just had them in the house, and I just started, and I really haven't unpacked it all that much, so I can't tell you exactly what the reasoning.
So you know, though, that if they're in the house, you're going to eat all of them.
Yeah,
but when you go shopping,
but I made sure they were in the house.
You're making sure they're
like
in the house.
I enjoyed them.
But was that like, I mean, coming back to, I guess, how they made you feel, those foods, right? Is it stress related? Were you coming home and you were super stressed?
I think I was super stressed. So,
and that was a light way to sort of,
you know, one thing I don't talk about much and is obviously the gambling. I used to be an excessive gambler, so I don't gamble anymore, which is great. But I realized that put a lot of stress on all my life, every facet, money, relationships, everything. There was a lot of issues. So I think maybe it was stress related in some sort of way. I'm not 100% sure, but I think the root cause of a lot of my problems was addiction. Addiction in the sense of the gambling, addiction in foods and whatnot. The sense of feeling, I guess, from, you know, the party mix, and you know, you bang on the Netflix and some nights I'd order a pizza. I'd go and pick the pizza up. Across the road was the Coles. I'd go with a block of chocolate, a Coke, and the Alan's party mix. And I would literally eat a large pizza, a 600ml bottle of Coke, Alan's party mix, and a block of chocolate before I went to bed.
And I think this kind of brings us to a really good point, in that
I'm actually really embarrassed. It's
nothing to be embarrassed about. It's actually something. It's actually something to be proud about, that you are aware of that.
Mm.
You're actually aware of that. You know, so that's the first step, is awareness. Now, I believe that, you know, we're going to have to make changes to your diet, but we're also probably going to have to dig a little bit deeper into your overall lifestyle to work out how can we make sure that you're not getting to the point where you feel like you need to binge. What are those triggers? Because, you know, weight loss often is simplified to calories and oh, calorie deficit and this and that. It's not that simple. Sometimes there are environmental things, there are mental things that need to be addressed. And, you know, whether some of that we might do on the podcast, some of it we might do off the podcast, but there are tools available. And I think that's an important thing for people to listen is that reducing everything to calories isn't always just the answer. If you've been battling with your weight ongoing and someone tells you it's just the calories, just stop eating it. Sometimes it's not that simple.
Yeah.
There are other factors. And, you know, so
I think stress is something that a lot of people don't think about that adds to, you know, calorie intake and what you are actually eating.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The problem the weight gain is there is from excess calories, but it's not necessarily because you don't understand that calories equals fat. It's because there are things going on in your lifestyle that are leading you to consuming excess calories. Mm. And we need to unpack those and whatnot and work out some strategies so that as you are transitioning, you know, you have some tools on hand to address those. And I mean, ultimately, what you're wanting to continue to lose weight.
Yep.
Another
body composition is important to me as well. I want to, you know, because I've got the structure.
Yeah. So you want what you're wanting, and you've always told me you've got the structure. And no doubt,
the structure's
under there. So you're wanting to lose a bit more weight. You want to maintain or build some muscle so that body composition's changing to a higher lean body mass.
Yep.
And you want to stay fit, active, strong. Okay. So that we can do all of that. And at the same time, we're hopefully reducing your chance of cardiovascular disease and whatnot. And I think this has the power, like I said, is the beautiful thing about this conversation today is, you know, obviously you're a great friend of mine and I always tell you I love you. And
love you too, buddy.
You know, first and foremost, I don't want to see you at late 30s, early 40s having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Because I truly believe we have enough information to make changes now and you can avoid that.
Well, especially I had no idea that eating a plant-based diet would help reverse and there's data and science behind that.
Yeah. So we haven't even touched on that. It's a good point. There are clinical trials. So there's a few of note. One's a randomized controlled trial and one is a non-randomized, but a controlled trial nonetheless. And they've put subjects onto one was a low-fat vegetarian diet.
Yep.
And the other was a low-fat vegan diet and monitored the blockages and cardiac events and deaths, whether it was an angina or a heart attack or was it death from cardiovascular disease. And, you know, seeing significant improvements, reversal, you know, those arteries opening back up. The vegetarian intervention was very much kind of what we're talking about here in terms of it was an overall lifestyle change. So people were doing things to de-stress. They were moving more. You know, there was no smoking. No alcohol consumption. So to attribute it all to the diet is difficult, but I think nonetheless, what it shows is a multifactorial approach, which can literally open up the arteries. And I think we're on the same page. We're not talking about just changing your diet. No, we're talking about a lifestyle change. And that's where I see the value of that trial. People will argue, oh, but they were doing other things, not just diet. But to date, that trial and the other one, the low-fat vegan, are the only trials that have shown reversal of heart disease. Whether or not there was some other lifestyle factors at play is irrelevant because I'm advocating for those as well. I'm not just saying change your diet and keep smoking. So yes, we have science to show that it is possible to not only prevent or slow down, but to also reverse some of that big word coming here, atherosclerosis.
How do you spell that?
A-T-H-E-R-O.
Incorrect.
S-C-L-E-R-O-S-I-S.
I wouldn't even know what to start with.
You'll be able to spell that by the last podcast, I promise.
Okay.
And hopefully something that you avoid for the rest of your life. But yeah, so there is science to show that you can reverse it. You can open up those blood vessels. You can dilate. The blood can flow freer. Less likely to get a blockage.
Blood health. I want to know a bit about that. Probably not in this episode.
I mean, interestingly, one of the first signs of cardiovascular disease for males is erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, okay.
Now, obviously, blood flow to that area is very important. And
very, very important.
It can actually be an early indicator of a man having cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, okay.
In terms of blood health, I think you were probably more alluding to blood test. And I think we should do a blood test.
Yep.
I think actually that's a great step.
Well, yeah. Where would we start? Where would I start? I mean, I'd love to even think that I'd be able to inspire your listeners, friends and family that are still on a meat-based diet. I mean, especially, as I said, I keep coming back to how predominant a death by cardiovascular disease is. And, you know, if we can save the world one person at a time through plant-based eating and I can inspire some change in, even if it's one person, I'm all for it.
Yeah, it's everyone listening, or at least from a Western populations, or, you know, it's the most likely reason that any of us are going to drop dead.
Yeah.
And sudden cardiac death, mind you, is not uncommon, which is dying from the first heart attack. So this is, this is scary stuff.
My dad's third heart attack. Yeah, just done.
So it's extremely sad. It's scary stuff. Often we feel very distanced from it, but then, you know, it takes an event like what happened to your dad. Now it's no longer distant. It's very real.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so where do we start? I think a sensible place for us to start would be to sort of just ascertain where your health is at right now. And we can do that with a sort of very basic blood test.
Yep.
There are a couple of additional tests that I'll write down for you to make sure your GP requests when the blood work's done, just to get an overall idea of what your baseline levels are. And we can, in terms of sort of documenting this, we can document it on my website and on social media so people can see,
yep,
well, what was your blood work like? What changes did you make? And what education did you take from the podcast and bring into a lifestyle?
So from an experiment perspective, how soon should I make this change? When should I make it? Like, should I wait to, I mean, just for the listeners' purposes, should I continue eating my current diet until our next episode, blood work,
once blood work
is done?
What I want you to do from here on, right, because I think we need to also put some context in here. You and I are together today, then we're sort of going our own ways. We're going to catch back up early January after you have your blood work.
Yep.
What I want to do, because I really want this to be something that you can stick with long term, and I don't want you to have a bad experience, I want you over the next few weeks, whenever you're eating, to just think about increasing the amount of plants on your plate.
Yep.
Okay. So I just want you to think about increasing the amount of plants on your plate and, where possible, just reducing the animal product. Okay. That might mean ordering something off the dish, off a menu that is more vegetable salad focused, or ordering something and getting the sides of the extra vegetables. Okay, so we're just going to move you in that direction. In addition to that, so that's a simple change. Look, if you're eating out, look through the menus, find something that is more leaning on the side of more calories coming from plants.
Yep.
Okay. And the second thing I want you to do is to cut out the processed foods. Now, I understand that that might be a challenge, but also I understand your personality. And the longer that that's creeping in, the more that addiction's going to be there. After about 4 weeks, you won't crave those foods. Those foods are created by food scientists to be hyper palatable, right? Nature cannot compete with those. So as long as those are in your diet and you eat the Mars bars or whatever, the cha-cha or whatever it was that you were telling me about, unfortunately, blueberries and raspberries, they don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
Those guys are nothing for your reward system. Right? It's not being rewarded by blueberries. So what we need to do is we need to cut that stuff out. And after about 4 weeks, and particularly as we move further and further away from those processed foods, your reward system will change. You will now salivate over the sugar, the natural sugars in fruit.
And that's where you're at.
And things and dates. And that's where we want to get you, because when you're eating those foods, unlike the processed food, right, they are nutrient dense, they're healthful, they reduce your chance of getting various diseases. And also, they fill you up, and populations that eat a lot of them have a healthy BMI. So we're moving in that right direction. So the two main goals, just to go away from this episode, are I want you to increase the amount of plants on your standard meals on the plate. If that means ordering some extra sides of vegetables, that's what I want you to do, number one. Number two, processed foods. We're just going to put a line through those, Okay. And you can update us on the next episode and let me know how that went for you.
Can I have one last go? I'm just kidding.
And I mean, ultimately, everything's going to come back to, no one's going to be holding your hand every day, every meal. Ultimately, it's to continue to remind yourself of what is the long-term goal? What is the why? What is it? And how much does it mean to you to make the change? That's going to lead to whether you can sort of adhere to these changes or not. And once we catch back up, we'll go over the blood test. And then you'll have an enormous amount of other questions, because I'm going to send you some reading, and you'll have a whole host of questions, really common questions that everyone has when they're transitioning. We'll talk about calorie density of different plant foods. We'll talk about portion control. We'll talk about nutrients of focus. So if you're removing animal products and you're getting, no doubt, these enormous health benefits, what nutrients of focus are there? So outside of B12, is there anything else to think about? And when you are thinking about them, what does that mean in terms of, each day I should make sure I eat this and that, because that's giving me this important nutrient and that's giving me this important nutrient. And I understand that my body really needs them. Okay. And over time, your nutritional literacy, which is just your understanding of nutrition, right? It's going to improve. But what we're ultimately focusing on is an overall dietary pattern of as many whole foods, whole plant foods. And really, you're going to see the weight come off. We'll talk about optimizing it to make sure you are getting enough protein for performance and for recovery. We'll talk about that, but you're going to see the weight come off. You're going to see your digestion is going to change. Your digestion is going to change dramatically. And one of the big things that I notice, and so many people notice, is that feeling of lightness after a meal, rather than being sort of weighed down by like a really heavy animal-based meal.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've experienced that before, like with a really heavy steak.
Yeah, if I compare the plant-based kind of week I did, as I said, one of the main things I noticed was I just felt lighter on my feet, more, you know, energetic. And you eat a steak or a chicken and you're on the couch. So you've got to sit down.
And I don't want either of us to sort of be fooled here. No doubt. You're going to see benefits across the board, right? But the key is a lot of those benefits are going to be due to what you're removing. The key is I want to get your nutritional literacy up, and I want to optimize this diet so that it is set up for the long term. You're covered, you're getting all the nutrients that you need. Your body is absolutely thriving. It's not just benefits from an elimination. It's actually something that is providing you with optimal nutrition long term. Okay, so I think we reconvene with blood work, with a set of new questions that have popped up. We get an update on how you've gone with those two things that I've just set you as a task in terms of eating. One, adding more plants. Two, cutting out the ultra-processed foods.
Do you want me to take some pictures of what I'm eating and whatnot?
And yeah, you can, I think throughout the next few weeks, sending me some photos of food here and there is a great idea. And as I said, I'm going to send you some reading material, some information around, okay, if we're removing this, what could we look to substitute it with? I'll send you some recipes just to give you some ideas. You don't need to be making these at the moment, but just to give you some ideas so that when we talk about staples and setting up your pantry and regular shopping, things are making sense, right? Because there are some new ingredients that you've probably never heard of.
Yeah, never cooked before.
Never cooked with them before, and that's fine. What's great again is that this is a great example. Like, you know, there are many people out there who don't cook. So for me to sit here and advocate for this style diet, I need to be able to back that up and show that it is something that everyone can actually adopt. So we're going to do that.
Well, if I can adopt it, everyone can. And everyone should.
So,
by the sounds of things. So,
I think today's been a great place to start. I think we've laid the sort of groundwork and the backstory of where you've come from, why this is really important. And I'm excited to be able to share this with everyone. I'm excited to see your health improve, because it really will. And thank you for coming on today and sharing so openly.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me. Cheers, mate.
There we go, friends. As I said in the introduction, for me, this is what it's all about. We've shared, Sean and I, so many laughs together over the years. And being completely honest, it scares me to think about the path that he's been going down. He's been ticking off the major risk factors for cardiovascular disease for a decade or more, and quite frankly, really needs to make significant changes in the way he leads his lifestyle in order to add more years to his life and more life to his years. The great thing is that it's never too late to start making changes. The body, the human body, is an incredible machine, and if you give it the right nutrition, things will start to improve. Is it to say after all these years of damage, he won't get cardiovascular disease? Who knows? But the science suggests he will significantly lower his risk. And regardless, it's sure not going to do any harm. So where to from here? Sean's off to get some blood work in the next week, and I'm going to start educating him on very, very basic things like food groups, calorie density of different foods, simple swaps, pantry staples, and how to do this on a budget. Then we will reconvene and have a conversation together about his blood work and everything I just mentioned for you to follow along with. Sean asked me if this was going to be an 8 or a 12 week challenge, perhaps, to which I replied, no, this is a lifetime challenge. So we won't be strictly setting a time frame per se, but rather just slowly introducing this new way of eating into his life, along with improving other aspects of his lifestyle, particularly the smoking, and identifying areas of stress or triggers related to his impulse to binge eat on junk food. Until all of this becomes his new normal, I'll let you know on social media and send an email out as well when the follow-up episode is out, but I expect that to arrive in January sometime. Thank you once again for showing up, each and every one of you. I continue to be blown away by how far and wide the show is reaching. It's really beyond what I could have ever imagined. If today's show resonated with you, if it hit you in the heart, please share it with anyone who you think could benefit from listening to Sean's story. Sharing on Instagram and Twitter or leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app are also great ways to help make the show more discoverable. And before we do go our separate ways, happy holidays. Whether you're big into New Year's resolutions or not, I hope between the busyness that often comes with this time of the year, you get some quiet time to simply reflect on the year that has been and think about what you'd like to set your mind to in 2020. You may feel disappointed if perhaps 2019 didn't go your way, but that's okay. Life is not a linear journey. You're always going to have your periods where things don't go your way and not all things happen straight away. You may find that you laid the foundations in 2019, but we'll see the fruits in years to come. Just keep digging into your core, working out what makes you happy, what you truly want, and build some plans to integrate those things into your life in 2020 in a realistic manner. That's all from me. Much love, much happiness. We'll see you in the next episode.